This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will talk a bit about the opening of the legislative session. The regular session of the Louisiana legislature starts today with Governor Jindal addressing lawmakers at 1 o'clock. We'll also talk about a documentary regarding tolerance and diversity in our community. It's called The Inclusion Illusion, One Baton Rouge, a documentary from Cleve Bailey and Philip Smith. While the One Baton Rouge resolution failed to get support from the Metro Council, it highlights some divisions in this community, and it's all included in a 50-minute documentary that is now available for public consumption called The Inclusion Illusion. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Thank you for your support this week and today, and we hope that you'll continue to show your support for WRKF throughout the week and throughout the year. And if you are pleased with this hour of programming, please call sometime between 9 and 10 o'clock. We're joined now in studio by a couple of gentlemen who have put together a documentary called The Inclusion Illusion, One Baton Rouge. Cleve Bailey and Philip Smith are their names. Cleve's been in the documentary film business for some time. He lives in San Francisco. The film will debut on the 20th of this month. That's a Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning at the old state capitol. Good morning, Philip and Cleve.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about the genesis for this documentary that focuses on tolerance and diversity in our community.
Jim,
get closer.
Okay, we're both Baton Rouge natives. Of course, Cleve now lives in San Francisco, and but as Baton Rougeans, we both care about Baton Rouge. And, you know, there are issues here in Baton Rouge that we have to deal with. And some of those things are not necessarily addressed or talked about as much as we should be. And so we felt like this is a way to start some dialogue about some of these issues. And we want to see Baton Rouge move forward as a community. And there's an illusion that everything's fine in Baton Rouge. And in some cases, that is the case. But in others, there's some serious issues that have to be addressed and dealt with. And so Cleve, being a longtime friend in the film business, I contacted him about working on this project, and he looked at it and agreed. And so that was the genesis of the project.
And the two of you have known each other since high school.
That's correct.
You went to?
Baker High School.
All right.
Go Buffaloes.
And Philip went to Southern Lab, and Cleve ended up playing some football at Louisiana Tech. And the Metro Council, on more than one occasion, has shot down a non-binding resolution on diversity and tolerance. And this is what the resolution states. The city of Baton Rouge and parish of East Baton Rouge has a strong commitment to diversity and equal opportunity for all of our citizens, including acceptance and integration of people of all races, sexes, creed, colors, religions, ages, ancestries, disabilities, sexual orientations, nationalities, marital status, political affiliations, and people of all abilities and all walks of life into every aspect of Baton Rouge community life so that we all will be enriched by one another. Now, the Metro Council did not get the necessary support. The mayor of Baton Rouge, Mayor President Kip Holden, was in favor. But as of now, this has not been embraced by the Metro Council. There's some new members. Maybe some minds can be changed. What does the inclusion illusion do? Does it take a stand on this?
Well, I don't think it really takes a stand. We created it as seeds for improvement. And our hope is that through dialogue, through conversation, and through attention, that a new attitude and a new level of acceptance will be received by the LGBT community of Baton Rouge.
Well, the Metro Council said no, and is noted in the resolution. There are several aspects of life that are addressed, but one is sexual orientation. And Mike Walker, who originally was a supporter of this and became an opponent and ran for mayor on this show, he said, quote, that he was against it because of the homosexuals. Now, what would be of a concern to the community about sexual orientation being listed as one of the areas where the city of Baton Rouge and parish of East Baton Rouge are committed to diversity and equal opportunity?
Well, diversity, Jim, relates to all people, and that speaks to sexual orientation, it speaks to religious background, political affiliation, ethnicity, race, and we're all part of this community. And there's a price to pay if we choose to continue to have the position that Baton Rouge is not open to people from all walks of life.
Who do you interview in the inclusion illusion?
We interview Mr. Joe Tregel, who is a businessman and activist. Elaine Massino from LSU. She's in the social work department. Dr. Arp, William Arp from Southern University. Dr. Samuels, Albert Samuels from Southern University. Casey Phillips, just to name a few.
Do you interview anybody who is against the resolution?
We did not.
Was that by design?
Most of the people who were against the resolution didn't want to speak about it and get on camera and everything and tell the whole world. They were kind of talking about it at the kitchen table. So we got turned down a number of times in our efforts to get people to talk against the resolution.
Well, what we found, though, Jim, is that through our process is that for the most part, Baton Rouge has a general acceptance of diversity. But there's a small group of people that happen to be a very powerful group of people that may not want to see the same change that others would like to see. And so it was our experience through these interviews that there's a very broad support for diversity and equality and acceptance of all people in Baton Rouge.
Why doesn't the Metro Council reflect that, if this is something that would be palatable to most of the people in the community?
Well, again, I think that they're a small group of people, influential people, that were able to, as an example, with the One Baton Rouge resolution in 2007 and again in 2010, it was shot down. Then later on, the Louisiana Family Forum in 2010 made its presence known, and it was not able to be placed on the agenda. So, again, there's a contingency of people that would like to see things remain the same in Baton Rouge. And with all the good things that are happening, there's a lot of talk this week, past week, about IBM coming to Baton Rouge. It's a wonderful thing from an economic development standpoint. But with that, you bring in people from different parts of the country with different ideas and attitudes. And we'd like to say welcome to Baton Rouge wholeheartedly in every way.
Well, some would say there is discrimination of all kinds in Baton Rouge, as there is in just about any other community. It's a matter of degree. But do you think people are discriminated against on the basis of race more or less than they are on the basis of sexual orientation?
Well, I think any discrimination is not a good thing, and when it's obvious.
No, it's not a good thing. But is there more discrimination on the basis of a person of color, or a person who is gay?
I would sort of say I would think color. I mean, we haven't taken a poll, but certainly we have legacies that remain with us, and this coming out of the closet thing, so to speak. People who have been LGBT have been able to remain anonymous, only in their specific circles. However, in a racial component, we can't hide being black. And so based on some of the legacies that Louisiana in the South is, I don't want to say famous for, but known for, I would say that racial discrimination would be higher than discrimination based on LGBT issues.
And Jim, I'd like to say that the film itself focuses on several issues, and that has to do with the backdrop of that had to do with the One Baton Rouge resolution. but a component of the documentary deals with AIDS and Baton Rouge being ranked where it is nationally per capita.
Well, number one, right?
Number
right.
one, that's correct. And it has been for quite some time. If we go back to any type of reports that were given over 10 years ago, we were ranked nationally as well at 1 and 2. And so we'd like to see some open dialogue and conversation about some of these major issues, AIDS, the lack of acceptance and tolerance of people right. from different walks of life, as well as brain drain.
The Inclusion Illusion is the documentary film which will be premiering as part of the Louisiana International Film Festival. And we'll talk more with the filmmakers, Cleve and Philip, Cleve Bailey and Philip Smith, when we return after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. You may reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org as well. We're talking about The Inclusion Illusion, One Baton Rouge, a documentary from Cleve Bailey and Philip Smith, who are with us. And the documentary will premiere as part of the Louisiana International Film Festival on the 20th, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock at the old state capitol. HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. Gentlemen, more of a comment than a question. I was born and raised in Baton Rouge, but I've lived in Livingston Parish for 40 years. It's been said by many people, including those of the clergy, that we are basically living in a moral and ethical junkyard, and one only needs to watch television to see this. We no longer live in the era of I Love Lucy, Father Knows Best, Ozzie and Harriet, who you never saw in bed together. Now there's no holds barred on just about any time of the day you want to watch TV on what you see.
Times have changed. What does that mean regarding the One Baton Rouge resolution,
right,
HB?
To the outside parishes. Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, you're still there? Apparently not. Well, times have changed. So does that mean our thinking has changed, or are times much more difficult now that we need to be wary of doing something like this? What are your thoughts? Yes.
Certainly times have changed, and I came up a strong Southern Baptist. I think living in San Francisco helped to somewhat open my eyes as regards to different lifestyles and different cultures. But I think what I've learned and what I've come to appreciate is that people deserve to be treated as human beings. They do not deserve to be harassed or bullied or are pushed around. And I think that if Baton Rouge refuses to move in the direction that other major cities in the country are moving towards, we're going to lose people. We're going to lose our best and brightest. And I think we're going to be stagnant in our growth and our development.
Charles in North, on North Foster. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning to your guests.
Good morning.
I'd like to say, as everyone knows, public radio is geared towards children and people of color. I would like to ask you, guests, do you think it's criminal that the governor, the DHH secretary, and the mayors of Baton Rouge and New Orleans have not done anything about this HIV-AIDS epidemic that's consuming our state? I personally think it's criminal.
Highest rate in America in Baton Rouge, New Orleans right behind, and the governor and the mayors, but particularly the governor, they don't really talk about this. It's not good for business, certainly not good for putting our best foot forward as far as tourism and promoting the state, but it's a reality. So we're not going to change anything unless we address it. But what should the governor or these mayors, Mayor Holden and Mayor Landrieu, what should they do?
Well, Jim, governor, the mayor, any elected officials, can affect policy. And these are issues that should be at the forefront of every conversation about Baton Rouge moving forward. In 2002, Baton Rouge was ranked nationally number 2 in AIDS per capita, and that was 10 years ago. And we still choose not to vocally discuss it or to implement any action or policies to deal with the issue. These are things that if we want to attract and retain the best and the brightest, we'll have to address all of these issues. And that, you know, it goes to AIDS, HIV, it goes to equality and openness and tolerance, and crime and education.
Cleve?
In one segment in the documentary, we talk about having one of the highest rates of incarceration in the country, that being Angola. And this AIDS proliferates in Angola, and the guys get out and come back and spread it into the community. And so I think that policy, I'm not a police officer, but some type of policy dealing with those types of issues and that pathway back to the community need to be dealt with.
All right. Eli asks who else was contacted on the opponent's side regarding their positions. You said that no one on that side is in the documentary. Who did you contact?
We contacted the Family Forum, principally because they had been one of the outspoken groups that had continuously prevented and used their political power with the Metro Council to prevent this resolution from moving forward.
And they declined?
Refused to speak with us.
Did you try to speak to any of the Metro Council members who voted against it?
We actually reached out to several people in the community, and some people were not available within the timeline and schedule that we were working. But we ended up with a variety of people that did speak for the resolution. But we have included quite a bit of information, factual information, statistics, records from the resolution and when it didn't pass before, to kind of give that contrast of what actually happened and why.
Judy writes, I Love Lucy and Ozzie and Harriet were television shows. Your caller should do some research into what was going on in those families behind the scene, i.e. real life. Well, yeah, the Nelsons and the Arnezes were not necessarily the
All-American couple.
The families that they were portrayed as. Chris in South Downs. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, Jim.
Yes.
Yeah, it kind of breaks my heart that this is still a topic in Louisiana. I moved here about 20 years ago, and I just fell in love with the state. And I'm a gay man, and I've been an active member of my community, president of my neighborhood association. I've been down in front of the city council lobbying to try to make the city better. And in spite of that, apparently I'm not welcome here. And, you know, I once told you I think that Louisiana is heartbreakingly beautiful and heartbreakingly backward, and this definitely falls on the backward side.
Cleve, you live in San Francisco. You grew up here. Thank you, Chris. What would the people in San Francisco, if they're paying any attention to what's going on in Baton Rouge, think of this?
It's funny because Louisiana people talk about people in San Francisco, and then San Francisco people talk about people in Louisiana. And there's just this attitude and this opinion that Louisiana is a bit slow. And so I think that my exposure to both cultures and my filmmaking ability, knowledge, and know-how allows me to transport information via the most powerful form of media in the world to help Baton Rouge at least get information and evaluate where it is and where it wants to go.
Do you think you'd ever live here again?
Part of the year. I'm going to be here for 6 months. Working on two documentaries and a feature film. And so my plan for the next, I don't know, number of years is to spend half the year in San Francisco and half the year in Baton Rouge.
Philip?
Jim, leaders of Baton Rouge have taken several canvas trips over the years, speaking of other cities, to Austin, Raleigh-Durham, Nashville, Portland, Pittsburgh, and each one of those cities, vibrant communities, growing communities, but they have laws and ordinances on the books. And in Baton Rouge, we couldn't pass a simple non-binding resolution stating that we were open to people from different walks of life.
There's some new members of the council. Are you going to approach them?
Well, we've created a film, and hopefully that film will spark some conversation and dialogue in the community, and those people that are in that arena may take it upon themselves to take some action beyond that, and that's what we'd like to see. You know, we've had enough, you know, happy talk, people saying a lot of things, saying a lot of positive things, but you've got to, you know, do more than talk, and hopefully someone will take action.
297-5633 if you'd like to get in before the finish line with Cleve Bailey and Philip Smith. The documentary is The Inclusion Illusion, One Baton Rouge. It'll be premiering as part of the Louisiana International Film Festival on the 20th, a week from Saturday, 10 a.m. at the Old State Capitol. This resolution symbolically could mean a great deal, but what would it mean for people, particularly gay people in Baton Rouge, as far as their everyday living conditions?
Well, I think that much like we don't want to compare it to the Civil Rights Movement, but that's been the last big movement in the United States where something was against the law and then became law. I think it'll make Baton Rouge a better place. Just because we have many different colors in the spectrum of light, or many different flavors, we don't have to partake in it all. But I think that it will make people like the gentleman who just called feel more welcome, more able and open to express who he is and what he's about. But by the same token, I think that staying in your lane is very important as well, and not forcing a lifestyle that people are not interested in on them, or flaunting it in front of people who are not acceptable to that sort of thing.
And also feeling welcome. Great talent comes from every race, color, sexual orientation, different backgrounds. And I think that there's a social capital that would be beneficial to our community by including people from different backgrounds. There's a lot to gain by being more tolerant.
What did you learn, if anything, in your trip here, in your project, Cleve, regarding the life of a gay person in this community? Is it challenging, or is it pretty much a non-part of their life as far as discrimination? Is it something they have to face on a regular basis?
I found that people were somewhat sheltered, that they did not necessarily feel comfortable sharing who they were, what they were about, and their particular lifestyle. There was a case with a gentleman who worked for one of the larger construction companies here, and it was a sexual abuse case, and the details of it were horrendous. And he sued, and it's still in court. And so I think there's a lot of things that go on underneath the surface that these people are struggling with and getting abused on, and I just think that is what should stop.
And this is an issue, as we've talked with others on this program, it has particular relevance in the black community. There is a widespread difference of opinion about this.
I have an uncle that I asked to speak on this, and he wouldn't speak to me about it. He just, and so. I think I too am very Southern Black Baptist. I grew up in the Mount Zion First Baptist Church, and my parents are not necessarily for this. But progress is an interesting thing, and I think that as a community, we need to be able to open our eyes, minds, and hearts to what's right. I'm not saying that everything that the LGBT community wants is right, but I still think we need to be open, and we need to make them feel as if they are an important part of our community.
Yeah, the world is changing. This country is changing. And even if you go back to, you know, right now, the gay marriage issue before the Supreme Court, is prominent. But if you go back to a time when interracial marriages were not legal, the majority of the country during that time did not support that. Just as today, you have a split, idea about whether or not gay marriages should be legal. But there's a changing attitude. And in Baton Rouge, we've had the opportunity over the years to be at the forefront of some of these attitudes, and we've chosen not to take that route.
The Inclusion Illusion is the documentary from Cleve Bailey and Philip Smith. One Baton Rouge is the subtitle, and it'll be shown on the 20th, 10 a.m. at the Old State Capitol as part of the Louisiana International Film Festival. Thank you, gentlemen, and good luck with your project.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
And we shall return with more after this brief pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and thank you so much for your support for WRKF and for this hour of programming. Today, the legislative session opens, the 2013 regular session, which will run until June 6th at 6 p.m., 666. Some might think that's an ominous ending to a session in which Governor Jindal is pushing a sweeping tax proposal. Personal income and corporate taxes would be eliminated under the Jindal plan and replaced with a 6.25% sales tax that would be expanded to include a variety of goods and services that are not currently taxed. The plan also increases the cigarette tax from 36 cents a pack to $1.41, eliminates some tax exemptions, and scales back tax breaks for oil and gas production. And the governor has his work cut out to get 70 votes in the House, 2/3, 26 votes in the Senate, 2/3. That's what it'll take to get his tax plan through. And there are other measures that are under consideration, will be in the next couple of months, including a dozen bills involving gun rights in Louisiana, and most of those involve expanding gun rights. Medicaid, lawmakers have filed bills to require the state to conform to standards set by the Affordable Care Act, and there is a $24.7 billion budget. Without recurring, non-recurring revenue, it would cut higher education by almost 20%. So hold your fire, because there will be a lot of smoke coming out of the Capitol over the next few months, and we certainly will cover it right here on WRKF. Did want to update a few stories over the last few days that we have covered on this show, and some only peripherally, but I did note on this show last week with Stephanie Regal of the Baton Rouge Business Report that Garland Robinette, the well-known media personality, had received a $250,000 loan from Fred Hebe. And Garland Robinette has paid up. He's paid his debt. He has had a transfer of property to Mr. Hebe. It was registered with the Secretary of State's office last week, paying off a 2007 loan that came under FBI scrutiny. And the property valued at $280,000. So Mr. Robinette has squared his deal with Mr. Fred Hebe. And a few weeks ago on this show, we had Dr. Brij Mohan, former dean of the School of Social Work, and he made some remarks that were critical of LSU and its management then and now. And I did get an email that I wanted to share at least part of from Dr. Pamela Monroe, professor at the LSU School of Social Work. She writes, on Wednesday, March 27th, your guests included Dr. Brij Mohan, retired LSU professor of social work. Dr. Mohan repeated several vignettes to illustrate his claims of injustice perpetrated against him by LSU over the years of his employment. One such story is a claim that during the time I was his dean, I failed to forward his nomination for a distinguished award at LSU, which was later given to my spouse. On your program, Dr. Mohan stated a fabricated and misleading version of events. Dr. Mohan then offered his story as evidence of what he called a brutal injustice, and further used the story as an example of what he called the culture of corruption at LSU. Dr. Monroe finishes by saying, in the spirit of the season in which we find ourselves, I urge Dr. Mohan to be reconciled with his colleagues and his university by giving up the false and misleading stories he repeats at every opportunity about his treatment at LSU. Thank you for allowing me the privilege of setting the record straight on at least one such tale. On a somewhat happier note at LSU, the baseball team is off to its best start in history. The number two Tigers finished their third consecutive sweep of a league opponent, beating number nine Kentucky 11-4 Sunday afternoon at Alex Box Stadium. LSU is now 30-2, and this is a program that has won six national titles in the last 22 years, including one under the current coach Paul Maneri. I'm sure right now Coach Maneri has to think this is his best team ever. The Tigers are 11-1 in SEC play, matching the school record league starts of the 1991 and 1996 teams. Both of those teams won national championships for LSU. The Tigers will play Southern in the Wally Pontiff Junior Classic, 7 o'clock Tuesday at Zephyr Field in Metairie. And it is nice to see LSU playing Southern University in baseball, and it would be even nicer if LSU played Southern University in other sports, in basketball. This year, I think Southern probably would have defeated LSU on most nights in basketball, and that's not to say LSU didn't have a good team in its first year under Coach Johnny Jones. It's just that Southern was even better. And in football, if LSU is going to play all these lightweight opponents, as they occasionally do, and many from the state of Louisiana, teams that are not in the class of an SEC caliber program, programs like McNeese and others in Louisiana, Northwestern State, then LSU should play Southern University. Can you imagine the spectacle that would be involved if LSU and Southern played in football? Just the Southern band marching into Tiger Stadium would be a remarkable spectacle, and it's long overdue. It should happen, and Southern is terrible in football right now. It would be a rout of monumental proportions, probably, but LSU has many other games along the way that are, quote, rent-a-wins, and the Tigers every now and then need a little break from the SEC schedule, and Southern would not only be a break, but would be a spectacle as well, and there would be widespread interest in the community if LSU and Southern played in football. They have played in basketball, but it's been a while. I recall many years ago when Dale Brown was in his prime, Southern came to town, and it was, when I say came to town, came across town, and it was a game that was decided by less than 10 points. Now, in the 2013 football schedule, Kevin Gallagher shows me, LSU will play Kent State on September 7th at home. Kent State. September 14th, LSU plays the University of Alabama, Birmingham at home. On October 26th, the Fighting Tigers of Les Miles will face Mighty Furman right here in Baton Rouge. So if LSU can play Kent State, UAB, and Furman, then why can't the Tigers play Southern University? There are some other games along the way that will be much more competitive, as we know, including one November 9th at Alabama against Nick Saban's Crimson Tide, but LSU does have some games along the way that are intentionally inserted to ease up on the schedule. There will be a good opener for the Tigers. It all starts August 31st. We're only, what, 4.5 months away from the start of the 2013 football season as LSU faces TCU in Arlington, Texas. And tonight, the NCAA basketball championship will be settled, and it'll be Louisville going against Michigan. Rick Pitino trying to win his second national championship. Last time was 1996 when he was coaching Kentucky. And Michigan in the Final Four for the first time since 1993 when they lost at the buzzer to the University of North Carolina in the Louisiana Superdome. The Superdome's the site of the women's championship, and tomorrow night in the title game, it'll be the Louisville Cardinals, the Lady Cardinals, against Connecticut, a perennial power with a record of 34-4, and that will be in New Orleans at the arena Tuesday night. So tomorrow night will be a big night in the Crescent City, as most nights are along the way. And along the way, over the next 60 days, we will cover the Louisiana legislative session with interest. Governor Bobby Jindal may or may not make news today. He may very well alter his plan in public before lawmakers, but we'll find out. WRKF will be covering this with interest. And the governor's own accounting firm, Ernst & Young, a major accounting firm nationally, has stated that this plan, as far as the business-to-business taxes on services, may not work. And that's the governor's own accounting firm, that the governor paid big money to look at his plan. The Legislative Fiscal Office is now looking at the plan as well, and presumably the governor will make his next move after the Legislative Fiscal Office determines whether the numbers are legitimate. And that's it for today. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Inkster. We thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned.